Cyberbullying has always been a commonplace in schools, but in recent years, cyberbullying, suicides, and school shootings have revealed just how serious bullying can actually be, and it's been getting a lot of attention recently. There's even a new documentary called Bully that opens today. On this week's Please Explain, we'll delve into what constitutes bullying and discuss its causes, repercussions, and how parents, children, and schools should address it. Joining us are Elizabeth Englander, professor of psychology and director of the Massachusetts Aggression Reduction Center at Bridgewater State University, and Jesse Klein, assistant professor of sociology and criminal justice at Adelphi University, author of The Bully Society, School Shootings and the Crisis of Bullying in America's Schools. It's published by NYU Press. Welcome to our show.
Thank you so much.
And we also invite our listeners to join the discussion. Give us a call at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Jesse, news reports suggest that bullying has reached epidemic proportions. Is this the case, or is it just a matter of it getting more media coverage?
No, I think it really is the case, and I think, you know, it needs to be addressed as a national crisis. I charted 191 school shootings, which are, you know, directly related to school bullying in most of the cases, and they, you know, have been pretty much doubling from decade to decade. In the last 3 years, there have been so many shootings that if we go at this rate, we'll have the same number in this decade as we had in the previous three decades combined. So it's quite a disturbing problem.
But, Elizabeth, it's hard to tell if that means that the rate of bullying has gone up or just the rate of reporting it. What has your research shown?
Well, what we really seem to be seeing is not so much that it's increasing or decreasing, more that it's changing. The nature of it is really changing. So some research has shown that certain types, like more overt physical bullying, has actually decreased as schools have more and more adopted zero-tolerance policies towards physical problems. But at the same time, there are other kinds of bullying, particularly behaviors that we call gateway behaviors, which are sort of very subtle psychological ways of bullying people, and electronic bullying that has absolutely skyrocketed. It's become much, much more common.
Well, I'm assuming that there is a line that gets crossed between teasing and obnoxious behavior and even pushing kids around and bullying. Do we have a real definition of bullying, Jesse?
You know, I feel like there is a false issue. You know, after every school shooting, there's always a controversy over whether this particular kid was bullied or not. And again, I think, you know, kids are treating each other badly, you know, pretty much as a normative practice. You know, in the last three decades, we've seen social isolation triple, depression triple, anxiety triple. You know, kids are getting depressed at younger ages. You know, kids are having a very hard time. And among adults and kids, you know, people are not treating each other very well. So I think, you know, if a kid is being hurt in any way in a school, the school needs to take it seriously, whether it's an argument between a friend and they need to do conflict resolution or something more serious. And the whole issue of, you know, is it bullying? Is it a person who, you know, is more powerful? Is it a repeated offense? Is just taking away from the issue of, you know, we need to address this as a community and make sure kids are treating each other with compassion and supporting one another, you know, when they're having difficult times.
But I remember bullying throughout my school career. I was bullied at one point. Other kids were as well. And the feeling at the time was simply that, okay, this is something that will happen in junior high, maybe into high school, but people will get past it. Just toughen up. Have we changed in our attitudes about how to respond to bullying?
Well, yes, I think we have, but I think that her point is very, very well taken. It's not a society situation anymore. It's not a social situation where there's one or two kids who are having serious adjustment problems, who are being sort of chronically aggressive and maybe bullying or picking fights with other kids. But there's a real breakdown, not just in civility, that for sure is happening, but also in psychiatric issues like depression and anxiety, and in friendships and in how kids are forming those kinds of social relationships. And that's really what we need to focus on. So getting away from the word bullying is probably a really good idea. And instead focusing more on what is going on between kids socially today. Why are they struggling so much to make those connections and to really grow up with more healthy relationships, and to understand that we may need to sort of deliberately coach kids in some of the social skills that they don't seem to be acquiring so readily anymore.
Jesse, what about the other side of the coin? What usually makes children targets for bullies?
Well, I think, you know, honestly, it's not so much who's the target and who's the bully. You know, in the interviews that I did, I found increasingly kids who were victims ended up deciding that they needed to be bullies because they felt like in their schools there were only those two choices. And you see the bully-victim cycle, you know, happen over and over again.
So that was a way of defending themselves.
Yeah, many kids who actually say that they are bullies or have bullied, you know, once you start talking to them, you find out they were first victims, and they felt that was the only way to avoid being bullied was to become the bully itself. And so, again, I think schools need to help kids have more choices. And what you suggest earlier is important because it is not an adolescent issue. You know, there's workplace shootings proliferate, and they relate to the same issues that kids deal with. You know, there's workplace bullying as well, and it's a very serious problem in our society. And again, you know, the social isolation that's tripled since the 80s, the statistics relate to adults. Our adults are not having, you know, particularly good friendships or social relationships either, so we can hardly blame our children for having a hard time. But I do believe that schools can become leaders in trying to change this national trend and help kids have more important relationships and connections with one another. So it's not just about how do you get popularity, how do you get status, but how do you develop a meaningful relationship with another human being.
So we assume that when a kid is bullied, the child will go to an adult, but adults don't seem to be all that much more sophisticated. Is it common for them to tell their parents, or do they tend to keep it a secret from their parents?
Most of the time they tend to keep it away from adults, and kids still very strongly believe that telling adults often makes it worse, not better. And usually, adults not understanding how to handle this is definitely one of those issues. I think with parents, it's a very emotional issue because many parents have memories themselves of having been picked on or teased or bullied at school, and it can be really difficult to know how to handle it. But I think that it's really, really important to understand that there really are ways to deal with this. And Jesse's totally right. There should be, schools need to be leaders in this, particularly around the issue of digital technology and how it has impacted this. Schools really need to be leaders in education and understanding how these problems occur. But having said that, too, I just want to back up to one point that was made a little bit earlier. It does not appear in our research, and we don't, you know, we interview kids, too. We work with many kids, but we also conduct research on hundreds and hundreds and thousands of kids. And the research doesn't really suggest that all kids who are bullies have also been victims. There really seem to be sort of different types that come out. Some kids who are bullies are kids who are very high functioning, who haven't really been targets themselves, and who are doing well in school and who appear to be socially really successful. So I think one of the things we have to do as adults is get away a little bit from the stereotypes that we tend to hold about who are bullies and who are victims, and really focus more, like Jesse said, on how, you know, what are your relationships like, and how can we give kids the skills that they need to develop those kinds of healthier social relationships, and adults too for that matter. But I mean, you know, we're really talking about kids.
But aren't
here today,
a lot of the kids who are bullied kids who are outsiders of one sort or another, who
not always
look different,
but,
who may be perceived as gay or have sexually developed quicker than other kids? And
that's often that issue, but it's important also to recognize that, you know, many kids who are gay bashed, who are called gay, are not gay identified.
Absolutely.
And many of the kids who committed school shootings, they attack kids who call them gay, but they were heterosexually identified. So, and part of the issue, I think, in terms of talking, whether kids talk to their parents, also has to do with the fact that many kids don't recognize when bullying takes place or when they're being treated badly. You know, when I've interviewed kids And even in my classes, they would say, you know, kids get called slut, kids get called gay every single day. You just have to get used to it. And they just consider that normative. They just consider that something you have to deal with and accept. And I think it is, again, up to our schools and up to our parents and our society more generally to communicate to kids, you know what, you don't need to accept that kind of culture. And, you know, we really need to be treating each other better and help each other do that.
But I remember back at school where some of the teachers were rather insensitive.
Didn't handle
these cases well, in some cases actually exacerbated the situation. And in the film Bully, some of the teachers are not only insensitive, they participate in the bullying,
right,
especially if it involves a kid who's perceived as gay.
I think that's definitely true sometimes. But it's also important, I think, to make sure that we all remember that there are many, many educators who work very hard on these issues and who really do a great job. So it's not, I don't think that we should get into, I don't think it's productive to sit there and say, okay, it's parents' fault, you know, or it's school's fault. That's really not a productive way to go about it.
But if kids are going to people for help and those people don't know how to help them, or if anything, might even, in attempts to ingratiate themselves with the rest of the students, exacerbate the situation,
it could make
it a lot worse.
That's right. The key word in your sentence was don't know. They don't know how to help. They don't often know how to help. So one of the things that we have to do is we have to develop ways where there's better and more access to faculty training, and that's very, very important. I can say that I really do think that in Massachusetts, the requirement under Massachusetts state law that all teachers be trained in this, I think has really made a difference. I really do see a difference in the schools that we study where adults are all trained in this, at least to some level. So, you know, I don't think it's a matter of people being callous and indifferent. I think it's a matter of not training them.
But it's also, I agree with that, and I think it's a systemic issue. So we can't blame parents or teachers or anybody else, but we do need to look at our larger cultural economy and politics and how, you know, there's not a lot of support for parents, there's not a lot of support for teachers, and it's hard to ask the adults in our society to be helpful to kids when, you know, pretty much adults feel pretty much on their own as well.
Don't people often tell kids who are being picked on to just ignore it, that reacting to it will make it worse and lead to its continuation? Is that good
advice?
Kids
are told all kinds of things about having to handle it on their own, either toughen up or defend themselves. And I think, again, what schools need to do with the support of, you know, government funding and parents and student leaders is really make this a community issue, that if any kid is hurt in their community, they come to the support of that child. And nobody should ever have to defend themselves on their own. There are a lot of movies about bullying where, you know, the end result is that the kid stands up to the bully and everybody applauds. And I think that's the wrong way to go. We really need everybody to be supportive of one another and not leave it up to the child to have to defend themselves.
On the other hand, can telling a parent or a teacher sometimes make the problem worse, because the kids will see the bullied kid as a tattletale as
well? I think it does sometimes make it worse. But also I think that when you're sort of down in the trenches with these issues, they become more complicated than just saying every child who's bullied has to be defended or things. The truth is that what we want to build is a society of resilient children who, when social problems happen at a relatively low level, are able to cope with them, are able to handle them, and then when things become more serious, sort of have the connection to an adult who can really go and help them with that situation. I think one of the reasons that this problem is so difficult for adults is we feel, on the one hand, like, of course, we want kids to tell us and we want to help them. But on the other hand, we also feel like we want children to have some capacity to handle some of their social problems by themselves. And a lot of it is a matter of degree. I actually don't see such a terrible problem with kids not recognizing things as bullying. Actually, in our research, we tend to find the opposite, that kids have a tendency to label all kinds of things bullying, and they know it's the buzzword of the day, and so they tend to go to adults and call many, many things bullying. What we found in our research was that when we asked kids if they were victims of bullying, and then later on, when we gave them a much more nuanced definition of it, the rate at which they identified what had happened to them as bullying dropped by about half.
What was your nuanced position? Well, first let me tell people who I'm talking to. Elizabeth Englander is professor of psychology and director of the Massachusetts Aggression Reduction Center at Bridgewater State University. Jesse Klein is assistant professor of sociology and criminal justice at Adelphi University and author of The Bully Society, School Shootings and the Crisis of Bullying in America's Schools. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. It's our Please Explain segment. We're looking at bullying, and we invite your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Elizabeth, you gave a more nuanced explanation of bullying. What is the nuanced explanation?
Well, we talk about the differences between conflicts or fights or quarrels and bullying. So the differences have to do with there being power differentials, with a target feeling helpless and unable to defend themselves, about an attack being not a one-time careless remark or a one-time show of meanness, but a sort of targeted, ongoing abuse of somebody. Bullying is really in the family of abuse behaviors, and mostly what happens between kids is more of a conflict or a fight. And all of this, all of these definitions, which have sort of traditionally been used in research for decades now, are made more difficult by what is going on online, because sometimes what we're seeing online is something that looks sort of more like negligent cyberbullying. It doesn't have the same tenor that it has in person. And that has to do with the digital environment and all of the cues and, you know, the information you don't get when you're communicating with somebody in a digital environment. So it's all sort of more complicated, you know, than it appears. And what we find is that kids get involved in a fight, they don't want to get in trouble, and so they report that they are being bullied. Or, you know, somebody is mean to them once, and they report that they are a victim of bullying. I've had people, you know, tell me that being beeped at on the street in their car was bullying. You know, people can call anything bullying, and the term is so broadly overused that, frankly, it's become almost meaningless at this point.
A listener in New Jersey.
In some ways, though, again, I think it ought to be meaningless because, again, you know, the national crisis shows, you know, the statistics are showing us, again, that social isolation and loneliness, you know, The Lonely American is another title of you know, a very important book. You know, social isolation is tripled, depression is soaring, anxiety is soaring. This is a much more serious problem than just the most extreme forms of bullying or the school shootings. You know, the incidental, you know, hostile remark will often escalate into something more severe. When I worked in schools, I worked in schools for 20 years, you know, I've worked where you know, creating a community made a real difference. And if you take even the smallest thing seriously, you can change the entire culture. If you wait until it escalates into whatever definition you have of school bullying, you've already got a serious problem on your hands. You know, if
a
school says,
absolutely,
we're going to have a town meeting, you know, we're going to have everybody in the school come together, this is something, you know, if anybody is hurt on cyberspace, in cyberspace or in our school or anywhere else, you know, we're coming to support that child, and we need everybody in our community to support that person, that's going to make a real difference to that child. And, you know, I do think it's not about trying to build resilience. It's about trying to build community and trying to build responsibility to other people. And it's something that's not happening in our society more generally. And it, again, is something that schools can do and become leaders in to help our students become, you know, different kind of leaders for our whole country. Because we have a very serious crisis on our hands.
A program in Chicago called The Interrupters involves adults who have been on the other side, often gang-related in this case, interrupting before a situation escalates to the point where violence will occur because one person pushes the other, and then it becomes a matter of pride and honor.
And
that's something that you're also kind of suggesting here, adults being able to break it up before it gets to a bad
place. That's right. And if you actually look at the causes of school shootings, there, you know, I have this chart. It's on my website, jessiekline.com. And, you know, I charted 191 school shootings that took place between 79 and 2011. A good 50% of them related to masculinity challenges, where somebody, you know, basically a boy generally felt that if he didn't respond with violence, he was going to get called gay or he was going to, you know, have his manhood questioned. And that they're the same issues that come up in gang wars as well. So we need to also address these issues of gender and help schools say to boys as well as girls, you know, you need to be able to embrace the full spectrum of what it means to be a human being. So many boys in particular feel so pressured to be violent in order to be accepted as a male. And that's something
Desi,
that, again, schools could
absolutely
be addressing.
Desi, I think you're absolutely right. The tricky thing, though, is how do you do this?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's so simple. I don't think that, I think that adults often do programming or do interventions, but the truth is that it's not so easy to actually
reassure or protect children. I've worked in schools.
Mm-hmm. Yes, particularly online. Well, yes, we have too. We work at hundreds mm-hmm. of schools every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very challenging to change environments. These are not easy things to
do. No, I agree with you.
And it's not at all easy,
but it's absolutely imperative.
I agree.
And it can't be an after-school program, one day or one hour. It's got to be something woven into the school environment. And,
yes,
you know, there
I
are schools that are all
that.
About building community, and that's part of their mission. And, you know, again, the schools that I've worked in that made it part of their mission and you know, made it part of the everyday culture really did change lives. You know, we had kids who were, you know, coming from gangs and victims of gangs, and, you know, we got them into excellent colleges and, you know, leaders and creating community. It's not easy, but it is possible, and it's, if a school takes the issue seriously, they can really, you know, work miracles, and I've seen it over and over again.
I completely agree.
I have to take a break here, and when we come back, I want to talk about laws that are dealing with it, and of course, I want to get into cyberbullying and take listener calls. My guests are Elizabeth Englander and Jesse Klein. We're talking about bullying on today's Please Explain. And we are back with Jesse Klein, Assistant Professor of Sociology and Criminal Justice at Adelphi University. Her book from NYU Press, The Bully Society, School Shootings and the Crisis of Bullying in America's Schools. And we have her on because we are talking about bullying on today's Please Explain. Also with us is Elizabeth Englander, Professor of Psychology and Director of the Massachusetts Aggression Reduction Center at Bridgewater State University. Our number here, 212-433-9692. We have lots of calls coming in and lots of comments from listeners. So let's get right to some of those calls. Scott from Morristown, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
Let's get right to the questions because
we got
a lot of calls.
I live in Morristown, New Jersey, and I have a daughter who's at the high school. And there actually was a high school death yesterday, and there's a lot of speculation going around about what the reason was. It's not established, but the kids are terrified because there has been a lot of bullying in our local school district. The high school is struggling to establish an outreach program to fight it. And just my observation as a parent is that the middle school is really where a lot of this starts to happen. I mean, they come from the different elementary schools. They all start to, you know, group up and, you know, form their little the mean girls groups and that sort of thing. And the elementary schools had a really great program for fighting bullying, very, you know, comprehensive, lots of hours spent with specialists. And then when you get to middle school, where exactly this is where it starts to really emerge and bubble over into the cyber space, they drop the program. There was absolutely nothing to help stop, you know, all these new areas these kids were feeling enabled in.
Cyberbullying is a big issue here, isn't it? Can you explain what it involves, Elizabeth?
Cyberbullying is a very powerful influence on what's happening socially with kids today. And the caller is exactly right, because we really, really need to address it, and we need to do it aggressively, and we need to do it in middle school, throughout school. So what I would say is that it's great that your system is addressing this in elementary school, but they need to start addressing cyber behaviors back in elementary school, and they need to continue this thread, both of these threads, what's happening socially in school, what's happening socially online, and they need to continue those through middle school. One of the things that we're starting to know, though, is that there are certain ways that digital environments change how kids interact, and this is a very new area, and we don't understand it all that well. We're really just beginning to. So it's not like there are scads of programs out there that any school can adopt. That's one of the things I think that's holding us back a little bit, is that adults tend to feel troubled or sort of intimidated by the idea of addressing these issues. They often feel like kids are better at electronics than they are. And that makes them feel hesitant about addressing it, either with their kids or when they're educators in their schools. But we really do need to start doing this.
But also, these social interactions are more private. Their parents aren't even aware of them. How can parents know what's going on online?
Well, you know, I would actually argue that the most important thing is not to know exactly everything that they're doing online. I mean, it's going to be very challenging to do that anyway. The most important thing is to talk with them about what they're up to online, what do they see happening, what do they see happening between their friends and them, between other kids, and what do they think about it? And really think about what some of the challenges and some of the dangers are online. Because the truth is that it's going to be very difficult to know everything that any child does in any digital environment. Even if you know everything they're doing when they're home, they probably have a cell phone, which they're carrying around. It's a mobile computer, and they can use it anywhere, anytime, any place. They can go to a friend's house. They can go to the library. They have access at school. Really, the only way to address these behaviors is to talk about what the impact of them are and ask your kids, what do you see going on? How do you feel about it? And tell me what you think is going on that's important. Tell me what you see online between you and your friends that bothers you or that you think isn't right.
But, Jesse, it can also be hard to interpret the tone or the intention of an email or a text message.
Yeah.
So this is tricky territory even for adults. How can children learn about the right and wrong ways to socialize and communicate online?
So, yeah, and I think that's a very important issue, and again, something that schools as well as parents can help children navigate. So much of what goes on online, I think you're right, is misinterpreted. And, you know, again, when we look at the social isolation statistics, we find, you know, a lot of people are adults as well as kids are having most of their social relationships online and actually not developing face-to-face relationships. And there are studies that are showing us that kids are actually not even aware of how to develop a face-to-face relationship because so many of their friendships are completely facilitated online. So, again, something I think both parents and schools can help students do. And if schools take responsibility for their children more generally, both what happens online as well as in school, they can help students develop relationships with one another and develop a community in school. What happens more often, unfortunately, is that when schools say they're going to take bullying seriously, cyberbullying or face-to-face bullying, is that they have these complicated procedures. You know, they'll say, I think in Massachusetts, when the last suicide took place, the 14-year-old in Wilmer, they said, you know, first they're going to have detention, then they're going to have in-school suspension, then they're going to have out-of-school suspension, they might do expulsion, you know, but none of these things are going to help create a culture where kids are treating each other well and respecting one another and developing, you know, real relationships and meaningful relationships and caring relationships. And that is what is going to change this bully society that takes place in schools. And what schools really need to do is figure out for them, you know, what will it take to create, to transform our school from a bully society into a compassionate community. And it's not going to be, you know, an after-school program. It's not going to be, you know, one training or anything of that nature. It has to be something that's woven into the school community, that's addressed in homeroom, that's all school meetings, you know, that becomes part of the curriculum, that a school just takes seriously. This is, again, a national crisis, and we have to take it, deal with it in terms of prevention, not just, you know, what are we going to do after the fact to punish the people. You know, and again, on cyberbullying, you know, you don't always know who the bully is, so the whole notion of punishment, you know, becomes a mute issue, you know, very often. The prevention is a much more powerful way to address it.
Now, Scott called in from New Jersey, and another listener in New Jersey writes, I'm concerned that our new law against bullying in New Jersey is counterproductive and perhaps even dangerous. The principal of my children's school warned students that the police will be called to investigate if there are any allegations of bullying. I think he meant to warn the bullies that they should stop, but the kids seem to have taken home the message that no one should complain about bullying anymore because it will immediately become a huge deal and make
I'm
the bully
sure it would
angrier
frighten
the next
them.
Time.
I'm sure it would frighten them very much, and that's one of the problems with doing the sort of threatening type of education. But also, you know, we know, too, that the whole thing, I think, is honestly is more complicated than it appears at first glance. It's not going to work just to threaten kids, and it's not going to work just to suspend kids. These things, as Jesse said, have to be very systemic, but we also have to know better and understand more about how to help kids navigate new problems like cyberspace. And so, you know, we have to understand how to educate them about issues like, how do you read an email from your friend if it has no tone, if it has no information about the tone, and you don't know if it's a joke or you don't know if they're attacking you? These are the kinds of things that we have to get kids talking about and thinking about, and it can't be a one-shot deal. It's these things are a brick-by-brick process. And I really don't think there's any way overnight to transform schools or communities, but I do think, and I do know, that schools and communities that work really hard on this, that don't just fall back on threats, but really train themselves in how to respond to it effectively, really go forward in education and awareness and working with parents on these issues and kids, they do much better than in other places.
Although there are some schools that seem to overreact, there is that case
where
a school got upset because one kid said another kid had cooties.
Yeah,
and,
that's
not bullying.
Everything bullying. That's part of that problem, where everything is called bullying.
Now, Lisa,
again, you know, you could have different responses. I think, you know, any kid who treats any other kid badly, you know, it can
absolutely
be addressed. It doesn't mean that, you know, the whole school has to be turned upside down, but it can
right
be addressed. And I'd also would add, you know, that, you know, your concern about whether there's a backlash against the zero-tolerance policies and the suspensions. There's some very disturbing statistics I found, you know, that, again, you can see on my website, jessiekline.com. In the 191 school shootings, since zero-tolerance policies have been implemented, there have been an increasing number of school shootings related to attacks on principals and other administrators who suspended a given child. And so, you know, we're actually seeing these kinds of school shootings increase at a very disturbing rate. 30% of the school shootings, you know, related to that kind of problem, and that wasn't the case even, you know, 10 years ago.
Now, let's get Lisa in here. She's from Forest Hills. Lisa, your daughter is a bully?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. She's, yes, she is.
How did you find out?
Well, she's just by things that I see her do on the playground. She's six. She's an only child. We adopted her when she was 11 months old. We never hit her. She's super, super smart. She in school. She doesn't play video games. We actually don't have TV, so she's not getting anything from anywhere but peers. But when she feels, I guess, somehow threatened or like an outsider in some way, her knee-jerk reaction is to start swinging. She's six.
So how does a parent deal with that?
I
mean, you could say
away from calling your child a bully, because, you know, I imagine your child has also experienced, you know, a lot of pain in terms of how children have treated them as well, her as well, because that's just, again, the normative culture. And I think it isn't that helpful or productive to say, you know, this is a bully and this is a victim. Again, you know, it's not always the case, but often it is a cycle, you know, where kids just feel that the only way to defend themselves in a culture that is rather mean is to be the first person to strike out, and that what we need to look for is, you know, how is this child feeling about, you know, their peer relationships? Are they being treated well? Are they developing good, strong relationships and friendships? And I think it's something parents and teachers can help children do is, you know, developing
friendships. Yeah, I think so too, but I also think that if you're feeling concerned about your daughter acting out very aggressively, then the place to start might be to have a talk with your pediatrician about what you're seeing and the social behaviors you're seeing and what you're concerned about, because they're really trained in these kinds of problems. They're going to be able to help you figure out if you need a referral to somebody else, if, you know, maybe what you need is some, you know, a behavior modification program at home or some other way to help you out and deal with this. But I really want to pat you on the back, because I think that it's wonderful as a parent to hear parents who really step up to the plate and say, I see this issue in my child and my six-year-old daughter, and I want to make sure that it doesn't continue. I want to make sure that she really has healthier relationships as she grows and that we nip this in the bud. So it's great that you're doing that.
You mentioned bullying among adults. Mary Beth in Manhattan says there's a recent article in the AARP magazine about the prevalence of bullying in old age homes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Are you aware of that?
It's a systemic issue. It's a systemic issue. It's, again, in workplaces. It's among older people. And, again, it's the reason why I think we ought not pathologize individual kids, and we ought not look for the profile of a bully or the profile of a victim, that what we need to look at is, you know, what is the social environment like in the school? What is the social environment like in, you know, an after-school situation? And that more important is to address specific cultures and help kids more generally develop their relationships. I don't think it's helpful to pathologize kids or adults, you know, when, again, we have a society of bullying that's become normative, that it's so common, that so many people are being treated so badly, that it's just, it becomes a response that people defend themselves in these kinds of hurtful and aggressive ways. And I do not think it's helpful to pathologize anyone.
Now, you mentioned earlier that kids sometimes are tormented for being gay or being called gay, whether they are or not, which is a common form of bullying. Has the It Gets Better campaign made a difference in how homophobic bullying is seen?
You know,
I think
we know
it
of
has.
The national
I
issue.
I think it has.
You know, the big issue where the person, you know, there's a kid who said it got better for him, and then, of course, he committed suicide, and that's why Lady Gaga developed her foundation. You know, my concern with the It Gets Better campaign is that the implicit message is that it can't get better right now. And that,
that's right,
you know,
there's nothing you can do about it.
Right, it's
right,
that the schools need
moment.
To be resigned to the culture the way it is. And
I think,
you know, schools need to take responsibility right now. Our society more generally needs to take responsibility right now and not say, you know, just withstand it, just deal with it, it'll get better later.
Yeah.
Can I just interject
here for 1 minute and back up for a minute? I agree with Jesse that this is a systemic issue and it's a social issue. But at the same time, if you are a parent dealing with this problem, it's not really that helpful to say, well, this is a social issue. What you want to know is how can you help your child today? How can you help your child tomorrow? Yeah. And that is also very important. So while pigeonholing children is not helpful, and I completely agree with that, at the same time, I do think that as a parent, it's incredibly helpful to think about, what am I going to do? How can I talk to my child about this issue so that they understand that this is not a behavior I want to see in them? It's not a behavior I expect from them. And so that they understand that I'm here to help them if they have a problem like this.
Well, we have time for one more call.
I just think, you know,
That's not so easy to do.
We have one more call. Andrea?
Go ahead.
Andrea, go quickly, please.
Okay, yes. I just want to say that I disagree about that the teachers, that there's no blame. I was a shadow teacher for kids that had learning disabilities at a school in Westchester for 9 years, and they were bullied every day. And while the kids changed from year to year, the teachers were the same. And the teachers, I mean, participated in it, ignored it. I don't think it takes a lot of training. All a teacher has to say is, this kind of behavior will not be tolerated in my classroom. This will be a safe place. And, you know, maybe then a child will know that they could go actually talk to that teacher, you know, if the problem, when the problem continues out of that classroom. It just, you know, I was just flabbergasted every day at what the teachers would hear and not comment.
And what would you say when you saw bullying?
And I had very little, you know, I was just a shadow teacher, so I would protect, you know, the kids that I was shadowing, but the kids who were doing the bullying knew that they really didn't have to listen to me. And when it was allowed every single day, I mean, they weren't quiet about it. They were loud about it.
We have just a minute left.
I actually agree with that caller. I think that's a very important point, that a lot of this has to do with being very firm about setting expectations for children's behavior. And one of the problems we do see in schools today is that educators are usually trained to only respond to behaviors that violate the code that's written in the student handbook. And a lot of bullying behaviors in our research are not those kinds of things. They're not overt actions that are written in the student handbook. So you may have a situation where somebody's being laughed at. There's no rule against laughing, and you can't have such a rule, but you can train teachers how to identify laughter when it's a bullying situation or abusive situation or a cruel situation and respond to it by setting expectations appropriately. I actually really agree with the caller. I think that was a great point.
Now, we have less than a minute to go, but a listener wants to know what adults should say to be helpful and to intervene. Is there anything particular?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, teachers, again, not to say that nobody's to blame for their individual actions, But that, again, you know, often teachers themselves are bullied. They're bullied by one another. They're bullied by administrators. And that, again, what we need to do is address this as a larger cultural issue. And, you know, individually, what we need to do is help everybody develop stronger relationships and for people themselves to be more present with one another. You know, the larger social situation that we have is, you know, increasingly one of, you know, people not really connecting with one another, not really considering it.
We have to leave it there. Jesse Klein, Assistant Professor of Sociology and Criminal Justice at Adelphi. Elizabeth Englander, Professor of Psychology and Director of the Massachusetts Aggression Reduction Center at Bridgewater State University. Thank you both so much.